the home team.
And here we go.
All right, rolling into hour number two. We are the home team presented by Golden Pantry. Eat, drink, be golden. Chris and Jeff along with you for today. And then Jeff will be on his way to Birmingham, Alabama. Hoover, to be exact.
Hoover. Suburban Birmingham. Hoover, Alabama against either Texas A&M or the Vanderbilt Commodores.
Our SEC Media Days will not be held this year.
That's very true.
We're moving to Capital City, Georgia. So we're here today, but Jeff will be gone tomorrow and hopefully for the rest of the week if all goes well for the Dogs.
I think all going well for the Dogs would be one win. And I can imagine that if Scott Strickland was listening to this show, how could you say that? One win there would be fine. Just get back and relax.
He might say, you need to sit this week out on the broadcast booth. You're going to be like rooting against us.
But it is one of those things, though, where it can be dangerous. You get a couple of wins, you get that taste of it.
Well, one win would keep you there all week because Georgia would play Friday.
Just where it can get dangerous if you play into the weekend, and this is where coaches just have to be careful not to get tempted to do anything that would mess up the pitching. Like, let's say if you're going to throw your ace, like we'll throw Chase Adkins on Thursday, okay, because he pitches past Thursday, and then he'll start game one of the regional in Athens next Friday. So let's say he pitches Thursday, and then normally Sunday would, say, be a throw day. Well, it's a throw day. If we could squeeze him for two innings, you just have to avoid that type of stuff. This tournament, I'm sorry, it's just not that important. Every now and then, now in 2011, it was tremendously important for us because we needed to get over 500, and we went 3-2. It was one of the great runs in Georgia history. But this season, with what Georgia's already done, it's just not important.
No, Georgia's going to be a top eight national seed. Let's get to it. I mean, I'd skip this week and let's just get to it next week. And Georgia's back in the postseason. I'm ready for. And it's not just the postseason, but it's the postseason, coming back to Athens for the first time in a decade.
I know.
Which brings us to today's 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. What is the outlook for this team in the postseason? Like, how far do you think Georgia can really get?
I think Georgia could make it to the College World Series, especially this team playing at home. They're confident. And, another thing that's happening here, just thinking about little things, Michael Curry hit his 9th and 10th home runs on Friday and Saturday. He's getting that power stroke back. And I remember thinking back in 2001, Kepinger had 9. And then he had 9 in the postseason and wound up with 18. And, so Curry getting hot. I think there's enough depth in the pitching staff. And like you said, the way that game ended on Saturday, and then the crazy thing, it started raining 10 minutes after that.
Oh, it did?
Oh, yeah.
Oh wow. That game ended just in time, though.
So the way that game ended on Saturday, it just made you think that this team has got the goods. We know they've got the talent, and it'll be the first time to the postseason for all these guys. But that's okay. I think they'll be able to handle it just fine. These guys have picked each other up, and I think there's a depth in the pitching staff for this team to make a run through the postseason, even if Georgia found itself in the loser's bracket. So I got all the confidence in the world that these guys could make a run to the ultimate destination.
We've talked about this tournament, and if Georgia went 0-2, it wouldn't be the end of the world, but would there be a chance Georgia lost out on? Georgia's going to host a regional no matter what happens. Would there be a chance if Georgia did just go 2 and out and went home that they would end up falling out of that top 8?
I would really doubt it. I mean, unless, it was between us and, say, Ole Miss, and Ole Miss went through and won the tournament. I would doubt it, Chris. I mean, I just don't see 20 games over 500, 18-12 in this league. Hey, the RPIs, I think we were 4 going into the weekend, so I'm assuming we moved ahead of Arkansas.
And just went 3-3 over Arkansas and Florida in the last 2 weeks. Let me look. I had that page up a second ago. The current RPI has Georgia at 3, behind the Gators and Stanford.
Yeah. So, I don't think Georgia can do anything to fall out of the top 8 at this point. And, again, like we were saying last hour, if you put the resume this year. Now, back in the 2000s when Georgia was one of the four or five elite programs in the country, you know, we were used to doing this. But it's been a while. And if you put this record and resume next to LSU or Cal State Fullerton's name, there'd be no doubt it'd be a national seed.
No, and it wouldn't have, you know, personally, I said it wouldn't have taken me like that long to, I mean, realize, like understanding like Georgia was having a good year. There was no denying that. You know, the results spoke for themselves, but just the, you know, asking myself, like, I mean, could this team really end up in the College World Series from where it's been the last couple of years to not have, like, gradually progressed to this point?
Right.
But to just shown up this season and, like, I mean, remember.
That's even, what reminds me of 01, Chris. That's what, yeah. You know what I mean?
But that the way the game ended Saturday was just one of those moments that, I don't know, magical seasons seem to be made of. And not that that game was going to take Georgia from having a great year to a not great year. It was still going to be a great year one way or another. But, you know, maybe it did move them from not just merely hosting a regional, but also picking up one of those top eight national seeds. But, you know, I think back to even the first game of the year that Georgia did end up winning. It was a 22-9 or whatever the score was against Georgia Southern. But, I mean, the Dogs were down like 4-0 early in that game. And right off the bat, it was just like, well, here we go again.
Let me tell you what, the biggest win of the year was the third game of the season. We had blown a lead against Georgia Southern on Saturday, could kind of feel it. They had their best pitcher going, you know, they're just hanging around. We had won Friday big. We were up 2-0, felt like it was about 6-0. Then all of a sudden they come back and beat us 8-3, and they're beating us 3-2 on Sunday going into the night. So it's like, oh, my gosh. We're about to lose 2 out of 3 while outscoring these guys because of 22-9. And Patrick Sullivan got a leadoff single, which I still contend is, if it's not the biggest hit of the year, certainly in the top five. Trey Logan dropped down a great bunt, and they made a bad play on it. So we got two on nobody out. We wind up getting in a run. Then Cam Shepard has a sack fly to win it, and we win that game. I still contend that was the biggest win of the year because it put us back over 500. Then we went and beat Kennesaw, and we swept Charlotte and built up enough wins to where we could withstand that four-game losing streak, and we were at 7-5. But, like, last year, we had won the first two against Georgia Southern to get to 3-3, and we hadn't been over 500 all year. Lost the finale, 3-4. Then, you know, what happened after that? We had those games with Ryder and Xavier. The team never got over 500. So, to me, I just thought it was so big to win that first series and to win it in that dramatic fashion. I mean, in the bottom of the ninth inning, it set a great tone.
Well, yeah, because Georgia lost that series.
You don't know.
After that first weekend, it would have had the tone would have been like, oh, well.
Well, we outscored them 22-9, then lost the series.
Yeah, I mean, here we are again. It's just, you know, kind of more of the same. But that was the first sign of maybe things would be different. Now, here the Dogs are, 37-17, 18 wins in the SEC, and headed to Hoover as the 3 seed.
And I'll tell you what, you talk about only getting 11.7 scholarships. Where Georgia's gotten an enormous lift. I don't think anybody could have seen Aaron Shunk having the kind of year he's had on the mound, and then C.J. Smith.
Well, and even like the recent surge from Kevin Smith is adding.
No question.
Some.
But
depth.
I mean, C.J. Smith before the year, I don't think anybody was thinking about him starting. Well, not only has he become one of the starting outfielders, and he's hitting over 300. I mean, he's become one of Georgia's 4 starting pitchers.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, Shunk didn't even, I guess, what was the first game he came in and closed with that Citadel game, wasn't it?
Yep.
I mean, I guess that was still somewhat early in the year, but that was with the third weekend, maybe?
Yeah.
So,
and that was a big lead at that point. And it was like, whoa, boy, he looks really good here.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden.
Just kept it rolling.
And my man's my favorite stat of the year. Aaron Shunk's in the top 10 in the SEC in saves and triples.
Yeah, somehow he didn't end up, though, on any of these all-conference teams.
That one grinded my gears. I really. Plus, I love it. Shunk, they call him Shunky, and he comes up to Brass Monkey, the Funky Monkey.
Yeah, there you go.
That's pretty good.
That's a good tune.
Yeah.
All right, moving on in the 5 at 5, Jeff, in the continuing saga of we as Georgia fans never feel quite satisfied about anything. A couple weeks ago, I was reading one of the, Chip Towers, you know, takes questions from the audience.
Yeah.
And despite the fact we did average 35 points a game last year, there was somebody was wondering if we were going to run a more up-tempo offense, Jeff. What do you think we will see out of the offense this year? I mean, Chubb and Michelle are gone, and you know, I mean, Georgia was explosive as heck last season offensively. Will that still exist? I mean, what type of offense do you think we're going to see?
Well, Georgia, as long as Kirby's here, we are going to run the football primarily. Will we throw it a little bit more? Maybe. But I was just flipping back through the spring football guide, and I went to the Florida game. Sony Michel, 74-yard touchdown. Sony Michel, 45-yard touchdown. You know, so play the Missouri game, Mecole Hardman, 35-yard touchdown. Sony Michel, 36-yard touchdown. So for plays like that, you know, can Swift do that? If Samir White's healthy, can he come in and do that, just that explosiveness? I mean, I think Michel leaves just such a gap. And Chubb was great, too, but the elusiveness of Michel. The question now becomes, even with the loss of Isaiah Wynn, is that offensive line good enough to where it can really mash people and open some gaping holes this year? But Georgia's going to still run the football. I don't see how we weren't explosive for most of last season. But if some people think we aren't. Here's the deal, though. In this day and age of fantasy football, I think explosiveness to a lot of people just means are we out there throwing the football a ton.
Well, it is and here's the thing. Georgia averaged 35 a game. I mean, I don't think I had any real problems with what Georgia did offensively last year. But Georgia was basically the second slowest offense in the country behind only Wisconsin and Army in terms of plays run per minute per game. So we were not an up-tempo offense, but we averaged 35 points a game and
the defense
could score anywhere on the field.
And the defense enjoyed that a lot, too.
Yeah. But I just, you know, I mean, maybe we will at some point. You know, you might have to go up-tempo or you just adapt. I mean, I'm for whatever system works, but.
Me, too. You also had a freshman quarterback last year.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the thing. There were people mad. And, again, I get it. It's Georgia. But, you know, when we beat Florida, we only threw 7 passes. We won 42-7. Who cares?
I know. I mean, I guess there is.
What does it matter?
We were, I guess, sort of a slow plodding offense when you just look at it like that. I mean, being as far as plays run per minute, the second slowest in the country, but it's not like I felt that. It didn't seem that way.
We were breaking all those long touchdown runs.
So whatever worked, and it worked last year. I mean, if we want to go more up tempo, fine. I'm not, but if they decide just to stay with what was working last year, if it still works, do that too.
And this defense, you know, there's some guys to replace this year for sure.
But it's just like this idea of like, boy, I mean, have you seen like what Oregon does? What if we did that here? I'm like, I mean, if it worked, fine. I'm not going to complain about it, but we averaged 35 points a game last season. I'm not really thinking about the results of last year's. Like, we really need to modify what we do offensively.
Well, I can
just
tell
keep
you
signing
this.
5 stars.
When we were going really fast a few years ago, all of a sudden you go 3 and out a couple of series in a row, your defense gets annihilated.
Those TV timeouts on CBS do help.
They help a little bit, yeah.
All right, moving on in the 5 at 5 today, the NBA playoffs, Jeff. Why are none of these games close?
I don't know.
We're in the Final Four.
Like you said, I mean, Houston clearly has been the second-best team. They were capable of beating Golden State. Why aren't we capable of having a good game? And here's my other fear, Chris, that at least – I can't remember if it was last year or 2 years ago the playoffs were kind of a dud. It must have been 2 years ago, but the finals were really good. Like, Games 6 and 7 were really good.
Yeah.
So, well, at least we'll get a good finals. But I think, is that the year Cleveland and Golden State were a combined, like, 24-1 – to get there, I think they lost 1 game total.
Yeah,
in the East and the West.
I think last year was like that too, and then Golden State wiped them out.
And I just have a feeling Golden State, whether it's Boston or Cleveland, that they're just going to absolutely trounce them. If it's Cleveland, LeBron would probably be good enough to win a game for them. And, you know, Boston, let's say it's 3-0 or 2-0, they pull it all together at home for one. And I don't know who has home court advantage, to be honest with you, when you get to the finals. I mean, Boston might actually have it. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't know if they alternated.
I don't think they do. I think they do it on the
just best record.
It's the merit system. So they'd have it over Cleveland, but I don't know if they'd have it over Boston.
Yeah,
both were 2 seeds.
Yeah. So who had the best record in the East? Toronto?
Toronto.
They will not be hosting.
So they got swept by Cleveland. Their coach was named Coach of the Year, and they fired him the next day. Like any other coach could have done any better against LeBron.
By the way, do you think their fans in Toronto going, how Raptors is that?
Yeah, probably.
Yes.
Although they're probably just hung up on the fact that I don't think the Maple Leafs are in the playoffs this year. How about a Canadian team with Winnipeg getting eliminated yesterday? It's been 25 years since a Canadian team has hoisted Lord Stanley's Cup.
So 93, that was a Canadiens.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not good for Canada.
No, it is not. I'm trying to pull up right in the East. Boston won 55 games. I'm sure Golden State won more than that.
I don't know if they did because
they won 58.
Oh, they did. All right. So I think they would have home court because I'm convinced last year the only reason they lost that fifth game to Cleveland was just so they could
win at home.
They could win at home and then make Cleveland have to fly cross country
right, just to
get whooped on, you know, 2 days later, which is what happened.
But I mean, do you see any way?
No, Golden State is winning the NBA
unless
title.
Something awful happens.
Yeah.
Like if Curry and Durant like got in a car wreck or something.
Right. If they couldn't play, that'd be it. But they're winning the finals, and at most they might lose one more game.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I think that they're either beating Boston or Cleveland 4-0 or 4-1.
I think if they do lose a game in the finals, it really is just so they can go and clinch home.
Yes, I mean, it could be a deal, especially if it's Boston. All right, they're up 3-0. Boston's going to go all in. Like, all right, we'll get 3-1. Then we go back home for game five. Boom.
Yeah.
We'll win it here.
And Golden State's attitude is like, well, we're going that direction anyway.
Right.
Whereas, you know, plus it could just be like, now we'll make the Celtics go out there just so we could throttle them.
Just give them a good beat down out there. I like how you're thinking. But they showed yesterday, too. They're just head and shoulders above everybody. And again, where I said that they remind me so much of those Lakers teams from the 80s, I mean, they're not quite that good, but they're really darn good. But, I mean, with the Lakers, it was a pick your poison. You had Magic, Kareem, and Worthy. And then after that, you had Byron Scott or Michael Cooper or Bob McAdoo or Michael Thompson. And with this Warriors team, yeah, it's a pick your poison. Well, you got Durant, you got Curry, you got Klay Thompson, you got Draymond Green. They got firepower off the bench.
Yeah. You know, when they get going and rolling,
there's
not been anything like it in sport.
No,
when they're on a roll.
I remember one year, Coach Durham, we were playing Alabama, and they were really good. They could get up and down the floor in the early 90s. And he had us practicing the day before. He had our start. We played them 5-7. We played the scout team. He had a couple of managers out there. We played 5-7.
Just because that's kind of how it would feel.
Yes, yeah. Yes, with their speed. And I almost feel like when Golden State's hitting, when they're hot, you got to feel like they've got seven guys out there. Because what are you going to do? You go man Durant? Oh, good luck with that.
Yeah.
He'll score every time.
Yep.
Okay, so you're going to double him. All right, who are you going to lay off of? Curry or Thompson? Well, I tell you what, all right, if you're still going to guard them, then at least one of them, probably both, is going to have a one-on-one matchup.
A lot of times it seems like Draymond is a guy who ends up open and he can shoot.
Right.
Yeah.
So then, all right, so we're going to really guard Thompson and Curry hard. We're going to double Durant. Okay. Draymond Green's 6'10", and he can shoot.
And he can shoot threes.
I mean, you're just
– yeah.
And I'm the guy that blows me away in a couple of years ago when he got hot, and I guess what did he have, that 37-point quarter? But when Klay Thompson is on – now, he's streaky. I'm just, when he's on, I think he's the most explosive scorer in the league.
Yeah, I mean, he's just an, you know, individually.
And he's
like,
but he's a
the
guy,
team
he's
as
like,
a whole.
And he's like 6'6".
Yeah, is he that tall?
Let's see.
I mean, but yeah, when he gets hot,
there's
no stopping him. But that's kind of how that whole team is. Once they start rolling, you could forget about it.
Well, and then you look at the other things, too. I mean, Klay Thompson. You know, Thompson's dad, Michael Thompson, was a great player. Steph Curry's dad, Dell Curry, was a great player. So
yeah.
They got the genes. I mean, that is crazy. Give me. 6'7".
Klay Thompson is 6'7"?
Yeah.
He doesn't seem like he's
that
tall.
Because they're all so big.
Yeah. Jeff, finally we'll wrap up the 5 at 5 with legalized gambling. The sheriff of the NFL, Roger Goodell, put out a statement today with a 4-point plan that he would like to see Congress act to come up with some legislation to make sure, you know, they've got this thing reined in. But one of the common reactions so far from these leagues has been that they want a cut. Do they deserve it? This is the part I just don't get what makes them feel like they...
No, they don't deserve a cut. Absolutely not.
Because that's just going to drive our prices up. That's going to eat into the VIG. We're going to be laying 150 to get down on something if we're going to be paying. But by the time taxes are paid and by the time these leagues want, you know, like 1%, although I think baseball's stepped back and said, we'll just take like a quarter of a percent.
All right, well, let me ask you this, Chris, and I'm not as familiarized with it as I should be. Now, I could see the leagues maybe getting a cut if they started putting windows in the stadiums.
Oh, fair enough, yeah. Then they get a cut of that. But, you know, their argument that, well, we're the ones providing the product.
Let me tell you what. The gambling on football, trust me, that's 90% of the reason for the TV ratings for the NFL. I'm sorry. If you count gambling and fantasy football, which is a form of gambling.
Well, it's already going on. I mean, between college and the NFL, it's like $1 billion is wagered in Vegas every year. So then all of a sudden they're behaving like this isn't already happening.
Of course. It's just going to different states. But I guess each state, I'm shocked that Jersey was the first to put it through.
They were the ones who were getting sued.
Could have never guessed.
There's one
that.
Thing Chris Christie did.
So
he got us gambling.
So how many states are going to I just don't think it's that big of a deal.
No, because as much as it's already happening.
So basically the difference would be now, and instead of quote unquote calling your guy, so if we legalized it in Georgia, what would there be a parlor in Atlanta you could go to?
Or I mean I envision, you know, like you can go play the lottery at a convenience store. Why wouldn't you be able to say, I'll take the
Falcons -5.
Yeah, I'll take Boston tonight +6.5.
Well, we don't need those lines too long because that is annoying sometimes if you're going I just wanted to go get me a chocolate milk and, you know, there's, you know, 10 guys there trying to get
in fact, I got to tell us, this was years ago. I had a friend that worked at a convenience store, the lottery, and he often would basically, like, lift the machine lid up and just tell, like, said the machine was broken because it got so annoying to him to, like, deal out lotteries.
Yeah, it's just like,
so
it's too much.
That was many, many years ago.
But, yeah, I just don't think it's that huge a deal, and I don't know how it's all going to work. But I could see it, too, now that they've – that it's legal in other states or that it's going to be legal in other states. We want to get our hands on it. They have no grounds either.
No. Somehow I feel like they will be able to grease the politicians into giving them some sort of a cut. Like, you know, if you're the Braves, you know what? We'll give you some luxury suite as long as you make sure you vote to get us 1% of any bet that's bet on Major League Baseball in this state or whatever cut that they want.
I wonder how the guys in the silk suits in New York and Jersey are feeling about this. Probably not too happy.
They're probably not crazy about it. Yeah. But
although here's the that could keep you from getting in trouble though when you go up to the machine, you got to put that money down first. You can't just run a tab.
That's the one advantage they might still have is the credit that they give you.
Credit.
Credit is the big thing. Like, all right, when you get down $1,000, then you pay me. Or, you know, X amount of dollars, whatever it might be. But, yeah, the fact that they do run on credit might keep them. And even, like, the idea of what it's going to do to the offshores. You can bet on the Little League World Series offshore. It's the variety of betting that will keep those things thriving.
Exactly.
I promise you, in the state of wherever, you'll never be able to bet on the Little League World Series legally.
But on a
not that I would recommend
game.
Doing that.
No,
anyway.
No, that is not good. But, yeah, if you wanted to bet on the Falcons to go, if you're in Las Vegas, you'd say, all right, I'll take the Falcons -5 for $20. You'd put down $22.
Yeah.
So you get your ticket, and if the Falcons won by more than 5 points, you go back, and when you present your ticket, you get $42 back, the $22 you put down and the $20 you won.
Unless the VIG is higher because of taxes and giving a cut to the leagues.
What happened to 10% of the juice?
They would have to – I mean, you'd be like, you might be at like 140 or 150.
So are you telling me Goodell's going to drive the juice up?
Goodell and Manfred and Silver and all, and even Emmert. All these colleges now are like, we're against gambling. But wait a second.
Okay, we want to cut of the VIG.
Yeah, that's how Marshall and West Virginia were. In West Virginia, they were opposed to it. Then all of a sudden they went, you know what, we might be open to an integrity fee, though.
An integrity fee.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, that sounds like something out of a mob movie there, doesn't
well,
it?
Well, I guess the...
Oh, it's an integrity fee.
The school's claims are it's going to be more costly for them from a compliance standpoint.
No, it's not.
No, because...
No, it's got nothing...
Your sports are already being wagered
on. Already being bet on.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. There's the 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.